We're going to show you a short video. It's about 4.5 minutes. It's a video found talking about the life of John Bunyan. It's by a reformed guy, but he's there in London at the tomb of, or at the grave of John Bunyan. And so we're starting it as he's been talking a little bit, and then we're going to stop it because he has more to say about other guys that are in that gravesite. But there's about 4.5 minutes here that talks a little bit about John Bunyan. I thought you would find it interesting, so we're going to play that before we get into the lesson tonight.
This was originally outside the city limits. And the Puritans were buried here because they were not allowed to be buried inside the city limits. In 1662, the great ejection, of which I've already spoken, the Puritans were put out of their pulpits, and then there was follow-up legislation that they were not allowed to go into the city where they had formerly pastored. Then there was legislation they couldn't even go into a city, period. And so they had to live out in the country and out in forests and wooded areas and fields. And they, it's like Christ, it says in Hebrews, was crucified outside the city. It's the ultimate sign of rejection. And so that's why these Puritans are buried here. They were utterly rejected. Even in their death, you can't even be buried inside the city limits. We consider you as non-existent. You never lived. And so I'm standing in front of one of the greatest nonconformists that God ever used, John Bunyan. He spent 12 years of his life in prison, and they never locked the door. He could have walked out at any time he wanted to. All he had to do was agree to stop preaching the one true gospel of Jesus Christ. And he said, there's no need for me to even walk out because you're going to arrest me and put me right back in here in no time. And so while he was in the prison is when he wrote Pilgrim's Progress. And as Spurgeon says, every page just has the smell of the prison. You have to be persecuted in a place like that to write like that. And as he looked out the window of his prison, what he describes in Pilgrim's Progress is playing off of what he sees, a hill, a gate, etc. And so on this tomb, well, no, it says he dies August 31st, 1688. That's the year of the Glorious Revolution. So he marks the very end of the Puritan era, which really began with Elizabeth coming to the throne, and it ends in this very year. On each side of this tomb, you'll see on this side, he's carrying the heavy burden of sin. On the other side, the burden is gone, and he's kneeling before the cross. And the power of the cross has removed the heavy burden of sin from John Bunyan. He was a powerful preacher. He was uneducated. He was untrained. And God does have those men that were never trained, and yet they rise above their generation because the hand of God was so powerfully upon them. John Owen said of John Bunyan, I would give up all of my learning. And John Owen was England's Calvin, and he ran Oxford for some 7 or 8 years for Oliver Cromwell. He was over all of Oxford, the most brilliant theologian of this Puritan era. And John Owen said, I would give up all of my education and all of my learning if I could but preach like the tinkerer from Bedford. He came and preached in this town towards the end of his life here in London. And it was said by the 19th century that every home in England had two books. They had the King James Bible and they had Pilgrim's Progress. And it became the second most widely read book in the English-speaking world. God used it in an extraordinary way. And he wrote many other books as well, The Holy War. etc. So John Bunyan is buried here. Now we need to know that during World War II, because of all the bombing, they had to reconfigure and redesign this graveyard. And I don't know what all they did, but it wasn't originally laid out like this, though this was Bunyan's tomb.
I saw that a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that you would enjoy it as we are thinking about Pilgrim's Progress, thinking about John Bunyan. He wrote it, as I think he did a great job of explaining it, except he just had a hard time saying he was a Baptist. It couldn't come out. It was like, we deleted that scene where he's like, but John Bunyan was a Baptist, but he's a Reformed guy, so they're not allowed to say that. It goes against they twitch too much if they would admit that there was a good Baptist. All right, so we're going to be looking then at our next lesson, and our next set of lessons is, let me get it set up. Our next set of lessons is going to be talking about Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Two verses that we're going to look at starting out is Romans chapter 12, and then we're going to look at Galatians. All right, so we're going to be looking at Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Sorry, those of you that are coming into our lessons, but we're going through the book Pilgrim's Progress. Then we're parking at different areas and then kind of teaching on this person. So last week we looked at obstinate and pliable. This week we're going to be looking at Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Mr. Worldly Wiseman, verses that kind of go along with Romans 12, verse 2, says, "And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." The Bible indicates to us that when we're saved, something happens. It changes us so that we are not like the world. Then in Galatians chapter 1, we'll read verses 6 through 10. I think this will help us. The book of Galatians, we'll see it quoted later on in our lesson. And I want to make sure that I get done on time. I have a watch, but I'll put two of them up here. That might help me doubly, or I may doubly ignore them. Okay, so Galatians chapter 1 and verse 6. "I marvel that ye are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. As we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that ye have received, let him be accursed. For I do now persuade men, or do I now persuade men or God, or do I seek to please men? For if I yet please men, I should not be the servant of Christ." So we come then to Christian meets worldly wise men. All right, now hopefully you have to wave to me if it doesn't match up. It should match up. So Christian meets worldly wise men. I have some writing from the book. "Now, as Christian was walking all alone, he saw someone in the distance coming toward him across the field. They just happened to meet where their paths crossed." This is not in his old English. This is Americanized, just so you know. "The gentleman's name that met him was Mr. Worldly Wiseman. He lived in the town of Carnal Policy, a great town near the City of Destruction, Christian's hometown. This man, then meeting with Christian, knew something about him, for Christian, going away from the City of Destruction, was well known, not only in the town where he lived, but also in other places." And it gives you a picture there of an artist's rendition of Mr. Worldly Wiseman. So let's look at a bio of Mr. Worldly Wiseman. He lived in the town of Carnal Policy. All right, so what does carnal mean? Carnal means not spiritual, fleshly. And I put a verse up there for you. Romans 8, 6 and 7. "For to be carnally minded is what? Death. But to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God." All right, that is our old English. So what does enmity mean? It means to be polar opposite. It means to be against. So if I am in the flesh, and that's where Mr. Worldly Wiseman lives. He lives in the town of carnal policy. So what is that representative? What is John Bunyan trying to indicate to you and I? All right, so here is Christian. He's fleeing the city of destruction. He's heading towards yonder wicked gate. He's got this burden upon him. And the book he's reading, man, it's offering so much conviction upon him. And he gets through the Slough of Despond. By that time, obstinate, remember, he's gone. Pliable said, this is crazy. You know, this is so hard and it's just the beginning. I'm done with this. Okay, so then he gets done and Mr. Worldly Wiseman comes up. But he lives in carnal policy. It should have indicated to Christians something's off here. Why? Because carnal means the flesh. It is not subject to the law of God, neither can it be. So let's continue on with his bio. He, like many others, had some knowledge of Christians leaving the city of destruction. It was well known throughout the region. He had been observing Christians' difficulties in the Slough of Despond, and he used the opportunity to begin a conversation with them. Okay, in the book, this is what he says, and it's not up here, but I have the quote. He says, I see the dirt of the Slough despond upon you. And this is what Mr. Worldly Wiseman says to Christian. But the slough is only the beginning of the sorrows that will come to you if you continue in that way. So what is Mr. Worldly Wiseman doing? He's creating some doubt, isn't he? Ooh, oh, you've been through a hard time. Oh, I can see that dirt. Oh, just so you know, there's more to come. More dirt. He's using the opportunity to begin a conversation with them. He says, how are you, my friend? Where are you going? You look so burdened. And he capitalizes on that burden. So he reminds Christian of his family that he's left behind. So what is Mr. Worldly Wiseman doing? He's playing on what? His emotions. Again, this is picturing somebody that has a conviction of sin. The burden is not yet removed because he hasn't been to the foot of the cross yet. It's still there on him. And so this is helping us understand as we're dealing with somebody that's unsaved. You know what's going to come? Mr. Worldly Wiseman. He's going to say, oh, you're going to leave your family? Because guess what the cross does? The cross does separate. The cross does make distinction. All roads lead to heaven. That's Mr. Worldly Wiseman. All right, so he's reminding Christian of his family left behind. Secondly, he sympathizes with Christian regarding his burden. He appeals to his longing for peace and the desired blessings of God. And again, the point underneath that, he discovers something about Christian, and this is Christian's, as we're putting it up there, his Trojan horse. He has a great desire to get rid of that burden. And in the book, if you're reading along in the book, Mr. Worldly Wiseman then starts saying about the burden. He says, you know what? You need to get rid of that. You need to get rid of it fast. And this goes to a point as far as Christianity in our lives. And again, John Bunyan is trying to teach us a lesson. What's the lesson he's trying to teach us? There are those that today, even in Christians, and I use that term really lightly, in Christian circles, they don't like, especially independent fundamental churches, because guess what? It's nothing but guilt. It makes you feel heavy. Well, yeah, because guess what I'm against? Sin. And guess what we should be against? Sin. And guess what sin does in this world? You know, we're seeing this playing out in our society. All right? We're seeing it playing out. Well, hey, it's okay to be a sodomite. It's okay to live wherever they want with morality. And guess where one of the highest rates of suicide is? Right there. You say, well, what's wrong? You know what? It's those fundamentalists. No, it's the guilt of sin. Sin makes you guilty. And guess what you need to do? You need to find a way to get rid of that guilt. But it's not always easy. Guess what? It's simple in some ways. Guess what it is to get rid of the guilt? Go to Jesus. Go to the cross. And he can help remove that. So what is Mr. Worldly Wiseman doing? He sympathizes. He discovers Christian's Trojan horse. And he alienates Christian from an evangelist council. So what does Christian say to him? Christian says, where did you hear about this way? If you're reading the book, again, I challenge you to read through the book. You're going to get lost some. But as you're reading through the book, what you're going to see is that he says, evangelist told me of this book, and he pulls out the Bible. And Mr. Worldly Wiseman says, oh, just so you know, that man, and that's what we're saying, he alienates Christian from evangelist council. You're going to find the world doing? They're going to alienate you. Mr. Worldly Wiseman, all right, Mr. Man About Town, all right, and today's movement, and, you know, most of us sitting here probably don't know of this movement, but in the world, in the neo-world, there's the grace movement. You know what the grace movement is? Most of it's heresy. Just so you know, most of it's heresy. There might somehow, somebody may get saved. But they're going to have a hard time finding how to get saved. Because they're just like Mr. Worldly Wiseman. And you know what? They're polished. And they'll come to you and say, you know, that evangelist, you know, those hardcore preachers over there. Ooh, they're so antagonistic. Oh, man, they're so harsh on sin. You know, we live in grace. Actually, you don't know what you're talking about. All right, because that sin put my Savior on a cross. It cost a huge price. And it does a lot of damage in this world now. And the devil's no friend to anybody. And so hardship is in this life, though. And then he wants to show Christian, and this is a quote, he's going to show Christian a better and shorter way that's not so difficult. Be careful. So what does he do? We're looking at this bio. All right. What is Mr. Worldly Wiseman reminding Christian of his family, sympathizing, discovering this Trojan horse, alienating Christian from evangelist council? He incites fear in Christian by suggesting a number of difficulties that await him if he continues on this current path. And this is what I don't like. He denigrates the Bible. Mr. Worldly Wiseman. And this is how he denigrates the Bible. And this is, again, a quote from Mr. Worldly Wiseman. He tells him, you're not educated enough to understand such things. You ever heard that? And in fact, if you study, remember that that's why we're kind of tying it to John Bunyan's life, because a lot of things that are written in Pilgrim's Progress deal with John Bunyan's life. If you look up John Bunyan's life, there was a man that worked to condemn him in the legal system. His name was William Foster. William Foster, I believe, is pictured as Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Some of the things. This is why. William Foster, when he was condemning John Bunyan to prison, said this. He said, you're an unlicensed preacher. And he said, you should not preach because you can't even read the original Greek. And therefore, you're not educated. And then he said the almost exact quote. If you read the book and Bunyan's in the Old English, Mr. Worldly Wiseman tells Christian, it's happened to you and it has happened to other weak men. And that's exactly those autobiographies that have studied John Bunyan's life said. William Foster said those exact words to John Bunyan. It's happened to you like other weak men that really don't know that much. I mean, you know, what kind of education do you really have? You know what? And throughout the course of Christianity, we've had that happen. Way back in the 1800s and then the early 1900s, you had a period of time called higher criticism. And it spearheaded out of Germany. And it came over and all these intellectuals with their big brains said that you know, Baptist We have Baptist bumpkins that know nothing. You know, but actually, and remember even Paul, when Paul was coming before, it was either Felix or Agrippa. And maybe it was the Pharisees when they said, much learning has made you mad. Right? But it's, and they were saying he had some learning, but they were like, you're a loony. What's wrong with you? All right, what they want to do is denigrate the Bible. They want to say, well, all you do is trust in God's Word. And what we have to understand is the world, they may denigrate the Bible. And there may be so-called Christians that denigrate the Bible. But don't leave the Bible. Don't leave the Bible. He utilizes the, you'll see on the screen, it says the ad hominem argument, as it happened to other weak men. And he questions the way Christian is going and offers his own better solution. So, Christian then comes to Mr. Worldly Wiseman and says, hey, tell me your secret. So what's the secret? He says, Worldly Wiseman says, go to the village of morality, encounter a gentleman named Legality. Legality's son is civility. All right, if you haven't read John Bunyan, you'll know he's got rhyming down. All right, and a little bit of flow. He can help you if he's not at home. Send for your wife and children and live in the village. Notice, Worldly Wiseman says, you'll live a happy life. You know what? That burden will probably go. All right, so he asks to reveal the secret. So what's Christian's error? And then we're going to talk about some of that quickly. He turned out of his way. He left the path which would have taken him to the light and to the wicked gate. That's his error. He began his journey toward the hill, Mount Sinai, where he witnessed flashes of fire and broke out in a sweat. This, in the book, this is what happens. Because as he moves away from the right path, he looks up and it's Mount Sinai. All right? And it's huge. It's massive. And he starts sweating because it seems insurmountable. He became frightened and his burden felt heavier. So I give you a verse. This is Exodus 19, 16 through 20. This is Moses when he came to Mount Sinai. So if you want to just mark it down and you can reference it, because it's Mr. Worldly Wiseman is taking them through the realm of the law to get saved. That's what he's trying to do. He's saying the law. Okay? So I'm going to skip right to this. So what is the law? Mr. Worldly Wiseman is, and so John Bunyan in his writing refers to what he's taking into is legality and its civility. You'll be, you'll learn to be a proper person. You'll learn to be educated. It's legality. It's the law. So is there a purpose? Yes. The law, there is a purpose. The law is a tutor. It reflects the perfect righteousness of God and reveals much about the character of God. Okay? It illuminates our sin. Look at the verse down there, Galatians 3:24. Wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ that we might be justified by faith. So the law, what is it? It's a tutor. The law, it restrains sin and evil. It's civil law. That's why Mr. Civility lives there. Laws are good, but the law restrains those who are unjust and protects the righteous from all evil. One man says this, the law allows for a limited measure of justice on this earth until the last judgment is realized. God instituted governments and parents and laws, restrictions and civil ordinances for this purpose. All right, but then we have John 14. What is the law? The law is a tutor. It's to bring some civility, but it reveals what is pleasing to God. John 14, 21. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me, and he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself to him. The highest function of the law is to serve as an instrument for the people of God to give them honor and glory. So is the law evil? The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. Romans 7, wherefore the law is holy and the commandments holy and just and good. All right, and then I think I give you a quote here. Mr. Worldly Wiseman and all his connections dislike the atonement. All right, the problem is not the law. It's that Mr. Worldly Wiseman does not like the atonement. He's relying on the law. The cross of Christ is foolishness unto those that are relying on the law, except to make signs with it to be seen of men. In all likelihood, Mr. Legality's own chapel in that town of morality had a cross on the top of it. For so do men who deny the atonement. They cover up that denial by mingling the atonement and morality together. I'm thinking of Catholicism as I'm thinking of this. I know good people that are Catholics. But what are they relying on? I know good people that are Jewish. But what are they relying upon? The law. They do not like the atonement alone of God and Christ to take away our sin. So do men who deny the atonement cover up that denial by mingling the atonement and morality together, which answers the same purpose as denying it utterly. For if a man seeks to get rid of his burden by morality in part, he does not rest on the atonement at all. And just so, the men who hate the great truth of justification by faith, because that cuts off all worldly pride and kills sin and self utterly, will often not avow that hatred plainly, but say that men must be justified by faith and works together. That is the blood of Christ alone and no works, though a man had a universe full of them to present to God that can cleanse the soul from sin. So what is the verse? Galatians 3, verses 1 and 2. O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ hath been evidently set forth, crucified among you? This only would I learn of you. Received ye the Spirit of by the works of the law, or by the hearing of faith? Remember, I used that Galatians 1 as a starting point, as a verse, as we are talking about Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Is he a good person? He lives in one of the people there is Mr. Legality and Mr. Civility. Man, they're good people. But they live in the town of carnal policy. And that is because it is motivated by the flesh. It's doing good deeds because I am good. And you know what? There's nothing good in you. There's nothing good. There's no way you can earn your way to salvation. There's no way. Now, is it saying that, you know what, we shouldn't be good? Well, that's a silly argument. It's a silly argument. Because in the Bible, you're mixing apples and oranges. We're not saying that after we're saved, we shouldn't do good deeds. That's the whole book of James. But what we are saying is that getting to salvation, there is nothing. It's not by works of righteousness which I have done. And Worldly Wiseman wants to mix it up. And you cannot mix it up. It is either all Christ or none of Christ. So, another quote. This is Martin Luther. He said, either Christ must live and the law perish, or the law remains and Christ must perish. Christ and, think about this, this is Martin Luther, Christ and, maybe we should post this, all right, the good old Lutherans and Catholics, all right, that revere him. Christ and the law cannot dwell side by side in the conscience. To muddle the two is to eliminate the gospel of Christ entirely. Whoa, lost that one in his writings. So what is returning to the law? How serious is it? Paul argues that those who return to the law for their justification are bewitched. Okay? That's that verse in Galatians. Galatians, who hath bewitched you? All right? They're deceived. A deceived person doesn't know that they are deceived because they are deceived. If you ever talk to someone that's deceived, they're like, oh no. I mean, you can't convince them. That's what he's saying. Mr. Worldly Wiseman is deceived. They may have strayed so far from the truth that they may never return to the truth. The law never produces true conversion. So here then is another quote by Martin Luther. We want it understood that we do not reject the law as our opponents, claim. On the contrary, we uphold the law. We say the law is good if it is used for the purpose for which it was designed, to check civil transgression, to magnify spiritual transgression. The law is also a light like the gospel, but instead of revealing the grace of God and righteousness and life, the law brings sin, death, and the wrath of God to light. You get it? Here we go. This is the business of the law, and here the business of the law ends and should go no further. The business of the gospel, on the other hand, is to quicken, to comfort, to raise the fallen. The gospel carries the news that God, for Christ's sake, is merciful to the most unworthy sinners. They will only believe that Christ, by his death, has delivered them from sin and everlasting death unto grace, forgiveness, and everlasting life. Pretty good quote. That was by Martin Luther. So let's think again as we close. Suppose that there are two roads to heaven that exist. One is the low road, which goes by the way of the cross. To travel such a road, one must do what? And that's what Pilgrim, he's heading down this low road. But guess what that low road, guess why it's low? Because you have to admit you're a sinner. You have to humble yourself. You have to confess that you're nothing. You have to cling to Christ alone. So it's this road of humility. The other is this high road. Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Ooh, look it. And that's why in the book, when he veered off the path, he gets talking to Mr. Worldly Wiseman, and then he starts heading to the city, Carnal Policy. It's huge. In the book, it's Mount Sinai. And all of a sudden, evangelist is there coming to him. And it says in the book that Christian is sweating and fear takes over him. And the burden becomes heavier. Why? Because it's insurmountable. It's impossible. That's what the law does. Oh, but there's good people that obey the law. They're good here on this earth, but they're not saved because the law is not going to get them saved. So the other way is this high road, the way of the law and the commandments. It's said to be better because one does not have to admit sin to go to this route. In fact, people admire those who travel this road because of their civility, their goodness, and their good reputation. However, there's one catch. If at any time you break one law, the law condemns you. Is that Bible? Yes, it is. And all of us, how can we keep all the law? It's impossible. So the charlatans that are out there, the Mr. Worldly Wisemans that are out there touting that, you know, it's works and salvation by faith. It's wrong. It's not both. It is by Christ alone. And as we progress through the story, you'll see that Mount Sinai that's there, it creates fear and it creates a heavier burden. And so I have to do more works. I have to do more good deeds. And there's no satisfaction. There's no, what's that word satisfaction? That is built into the word atonement. There's no atonement for my sin. Why? Because Christ alone atoned for my sin. And that's our lesson for this evening. Our lesson for this evening covers Mr. Worldly Wiseman. Hopefully that will have resonated with us in teaching this subject here this evening.